14. The Tall Story of the Norfolk Giant. Standing 7'8", Robert Hales pursued a career in show business, which saw him working with P.T. Barnum and presented to Queen Victoria.
If, walking down London Street, you saw a man of 7'8" walking towards you, you'd certainly noticed him, towering almost 2 feet above the average male height. If you'd been walking down the same street in the mid-19th century, when the average male height was just 5'5", you would probably have been astonished. But Robert Hales, born in West Somerton, Great Yarmouth, in probably 1813, though some sources suggest 1820, grew to that height. He was from a tall family. His sister Mary was 7'2", and another sister, Anne, was a little less. His brothers averaged a mere 6'6". His parents were tall too, and there is a story, for which I could find no supporting evidence, that each previous generation had been tall as well, with a legend that one of Robert's ancestors was more than 8 feet tall and had been a yeoman at the Tower of London during the reign of Henry VIII. His family were farmers, but Robert developed a love of boats and the sea and decided to make his life afloat. Initially, he worked on a wherry, but only briefly. Look at the cuddy of one of the remaining wherries, or the facsimile of one at the Museum of the Broads, a tiny space in which the crew had to live, and you will quickly understand the impracticality of such a massive man living in such conditions. And Robert wasn't only tall, he was pretty wide as well, tipping the scales at something in the order of 33 stone. At 13 or 14, he acknowledged that he had to find something bigger, so he joined the Navy. Even in a naval ship, he had difficulties as a result of his size. The passageways were narrow, the ceilings low. Visit the Victory and try to stand upright in Nelson's cabin, and you'll probably bang your head. And think of the space needed for the hammock of a 33-stone man, especially one of his height. After about 4 years, Robert Hales accepted the inevitable and sought a non-maritime career. Aware that his height and girth made him an object of attention, he decided to cash in on his appearance and started appearing at local fairs. His remarkable size made him an instant hit in an age when unfortunates, such as giants and dwarves, attracted large crowds of the curious, willing to pay a fee to peer at them. This, to my mind, rather sad curiosity was a long time dying. Even in the 1950s, I can recall a sideshow at the Pleasure Beach in Yarmouth, in which a couple of dwarfs sat in supposedly domestic harmony in a miniature room, while a rather ghoulish public paid to watch them carry out household chores, or sit in miniature chairs reading the evening paper. So much appreciated was Robert that his fame spread rapidly, and in 1840, on a race day at Epsom, he was presented to Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. He continued to tour the country, sometimes in tandem with his sister Mary and her husband. They had a special caravan constructed for these travels, with beds 8 feet long to accommodate them. But he was soon to step onto a far larger stage. Apparently, as a result of a chance meeting with a theatrical agent, Robert was offered the opportunity to travel to the United States to work under the auspices of the great P.T. Barnum. The fee was £800, more than £92,000 in today's value, a huge amount at the time, and he gladly agreed to go. His voyage to the USA was not without incident. No doubt, given his love of the sea and shipping, it was something to which he looked forward. But he could probably have done without an incident, which certainly demonstrated that his heart was proportionally as large as his body. A child was swept overboard, and Robert immediately jumped in after him to keep him afloat until they could both be rescued. Once he arrived, he stayed at Barnum's house, while taking his place as what Barnum described as human curiosities. Another was General Tom Thumb, real name Charles Stratton, a dwarf who was a distant relation of Barnum, and others included co-joined twins and a bearded lady. Barnum was a rather complex character. A committed temperance campaigner, he served a jail sentence for libel, but became, and perhaps remains, an icon of American chutzpah. Perhaps his approach is best summarized by the remark attributed to him, The noblest art is that of making others happy. In the 2 years Robert worked with Barnum, he is reputed to have married an Irish woman, Eliza Simpson, who towered over him at 8 feet, and possibly had a child with her. But researching Robert involves material which is full of contradictions and blind alleys. There are a number of alternative stories. For example, that the marriage was just a publicity stunt devised by Barnum, who was reported to have sold tickets for the event. Giving some credence to this version is the fact that when Robert returned to England, he came alone, Eliza continuing to appear as one of Barnum's curiosities. Later there were other stories, notably that the bride was actually another man, and even that back in England, Robert deliberately introduced as his bride a large man. This, one piece of research suggests, may have been with the intention of deflecting any suggestion that his subsequent marriage to Maria Webb was bigamous. He returned to England in 1851, and despite his absorption with organising the Great Exhibition of that year, Prince Albert arranged for Robert to be invited to Buckingham Palace to meet him, Queen Victoria, and their children. The Queen was obviously taken with the Norfolk Giant, as he had been called in New York, and presented him with a gold watch and chain, presumably an Albert. In the same year, Robert, perhaps tiring of being an exhibit in a peep show, changed profession again, becoming the landlord of the Craven Head Tavern in Drury Lane. He remained there until 1855, presiding over a pub whose customers must have been a mixed bag. Although a rival pub, the Dog was recognised as the local of the thieves and pickpockets who thrived in the area, there were also brothels aplenty. Hogarth chose a garret in Drury Lane as the base of the wonderfully named Moll Hackabout in A Harlot's Progress, and the Olympic Theatre was probably at the zenith of its history, with a string of comedic successes to its credit. It was certainly a turbulent area, with street fights an everyday occurrence. Robert Hales was of a build which should have made it possible for him to maintain order, but he subsequently moved north to a pub in Sheffield, the Burgoyne Arms. He was still there in 1861, according to the census of that year, but he must have returned to Norfolk shortly afterwards, since he died here in Great Yarmouth of bronchitis in 1863. He was not, it is said, too comfortably off in his final years, surviving by selling copies of a brief autobiographical leaflet. Unfortunately, I have located no remaining copy, as reading it might have resolved some of the contradictions in the available research. Hard up or not, he apparently didn't sell the watch and chain presented by Queen Victoria. What happened to it after his death is not known. In fact, the only known mementos of him are his walking stick and lantern, both on display at the Time and Tide Museum in Great Yarmouth. Despite his reported later poverty, he managed to leave about £600, about £62,000 in today's money, to his widow Maria, to whom he remained apparently happily married until his death. It's rather touching to read that she spent some of it having his body returned to the village of West Somerton, the parish of his birth, where he lies in the churchyard of the church in which he was baptised. One more enigma remains. How could a man of his height fit into the raised tomb, which is shorter than he was?